Hi, welcome to James Miller Lifeology, where you'll learn to simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. My name is James Miller. I'm a licensed psychotherapist and a composer. Thank you so much for joining me today in this podcast. Let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get your free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. I have a great show for you today. I'll be refuting mental health stereotypes. I'll also be interviewing Shannon Love, who shares her incredible story of how she overcame psychosis. You all know me as a psychotherapist, but many of you do not know me as a composer. My first album, Consolation, was written specifically for people who are experiencing grief and loss. I like to think of this album like a book. Each original composition is written like a chapter in a book. And just like in any story, it goes from the loss that one experiences and eventually helps people find the hope for their future. You may purchase this album on iTunes or through any other digital music store. Be sure to download the digital booklet that comes along with it. The name of the album is Consolation, and my stage name is James S. Miller. The name of the piece you are currently hearing is entitled Temptation. A very wise and respected scholar fell in hard times and eventually became homeless. His clothes became worn and dirty, and he eventually started begging for food. He would go door to door asking for food, but seeing his dirty clothes made people assume he was lazy or was a crazy old man. They would close the door on his face or shoo him away. For many days, he did not eat. One day, a kind tailor gave him some old clothes and allowed the wise teacher to clean up. Unfortunately, he was still homeless, penniless, and very hungry. He returned to begging for food. Wearing his new clothes, he went to the house where he had begged before, hoping they may have a change of heart. He knocked on the door of the largest house in the neighborhood. The butler spoke with the owner, who invited the teacher in to eat and speak of philosophical things. The wise old man sat down to eat. There were a variety of soups, sweetmeats, vegetables, and desserts that were being served by servants. Having thanked his host, the teacher took a sweetmeat with his hands and began to feed his new clothes, saying, "Eat, eat." On seeing this, the rich man and the servants were surprised and shocked about what the wise old man was doing. The rich man hesitantly asked, "Wise teacher, you know the clothes don't eat, right?" The wise old teacher looked up and calmly said, "Clearly you think that they do, since the only reason you invited me into your house is because I have new clothes. Yesterday you treated me very differently when I didn't look or act the way that made you comfortable. Just as feeding my clothes is not rational or kind, so too is your judgment of me based on your prejudicial stereotypes." Refuting mental health stereotypes. We've all seen those people that perhaps don't fit in with society. They may act in a way that seems bizarre or just unnatural for most people. And many people can become very uncomfortable around that because they just simply don't understand. Mental health itself is essentially, just as it sounds, one's health of the mind. Often we have a certain stereotype of what that looks like. I know the movies that will often represent a person as perhaps a fumbling person or someone who is just incredibly out of it. And in that, it creates a stereotype. So in my field, I've been in the mental health field for about 20 years, and we have what's called a Diagnostic Statistical Manual. It's essentially like the Bible, if you will, for disorders. But what's really interesting is for any situation that someone goes through, there's actually a disorder for it. And of course, I'm not diagnosing anyone at all. But my point is in saying this, is that there are different levels of mental illness. There are different levels of disorders that some people are born with, some people create based off of perhaps drug use, or sometimes just a situation will happen which causes a person to all of a sudden act in a way that is more episodic or situational. And when that happens, there is a disorder for it. When the layperson is aware that everything that someone goes through actually has a mental health diagnosis, I think it really normalizes we're all the same in some way. There's so many things that the layperson doesn't realize that everything we go through, there is a classification for it. Did you realize that playing video games too much, there's actually a diagnosis for that? Did you know that if you have negative interactions with your children, there's a diagnosis for that? There's simply one that's called a phase of life. Did you know that if you go out with your friends and you get drunk, that there is a diagnosis for that? There's also a diagnosis for being addicted to using your cell phone. If you can't sleep at night, there's a diagnosis for that. If you break up in a relationship, there's one for that as well. So I think we're understanding that pretty much everything that we go through, there is some form of diagnosis for that event or situation. So my whole point in saying this is this. Sometimes we perceive certain people to be a certain way based off of our perception or the stereotypes that we've classified people because they don't necessarily fit in with what is considered normal, if you will. And I use that word very loosely. We often hear a story in the news about someone who perhaps did something pretty traumatic. And then all of a sudden, we classify anyone who has a mental illness to do the same type of thing that that person may have done that was in the news. And that's not the case at all. Some of the stereotypes that I've heard are that perhaps sometimes these people are unpredictable or dangerous. But that's actually not true at all. Unfortunately, most people who have mental illness are really more the victims of violence as opposed to actually being violent themselves. I actually once read a study that said that 3% of people with mental illness are violent, and that means that 97% of people with mental illness are not violent at all. Another stereotype that I'd read was that most people who have mental illness are incompetent, that they're not very intelligent, and that's very harsh, and that's actually not true at all. Anyone, like we said earlier, can experience some type of mental illness. Mental illness has nothing to do with one's intelligence. It just simply has to do with the chemical imbalance in their body. I've often heard many people say that people who have mental illness, that they're to blame. And yes, there are some times when a situation can be exacerbated. Nobody knows who's predisposed to a certain type of disorder until it actually happens. Sometimes it can be a predisposed gene that one has, or sometimes it can just be a situation that happens in one's life which triggers something, which then all of a sudden that person may have some type of disorder of some sort. I think one of the other stereotypes that I've heard is that people who have a mental illness, that there's no chance for recovery, that they will always have to live their life that way. And once again, there are different levels of diagnoses, which can be more chronic for some people, and for some people, just more episodic and more situational, and they will overcome it. But there is always an answer. There's always some sort of treatment. And unfortunately, those people who may have more of a pronounced version of mental illness may struggle more long-term than those people who have more of a situational version of it. Another stereotype I've heard is you can't communicate with people with mental disorders. And yes, sometimes that may be true initially. When someone has a form of a thought disorder, potentially like schizophrenia or some type of psychosis, initially it's difficult for them to communicate what they're struggling with because their perception of reality is so skewed. Another thing I've heard is that mental illness is evidence of a character flaw, and you're weak if you seek help. Well, that itself is pretty silly. Like I said earlier, we all have some version of something we're going through in our life. And in that, it falls under the classification of mental illness. But it's something some people can overcome right away. Sometimes people need assistance. But to simply say that asking for help is a sign of weakness, well, that's just simply foolish. Another thing I've heard is that mental illness is a result of poor parenting. The environment in which we're raised will definitely influence the way we act as adults, but that doesn't mean that that's necessarily a precursor for any type of mental illness later on in life. Another one that I heard that was pretty disrespectful was that people with mental disorders have nothing to contribute to society. I don't think I even need to comment on that one. Sometimes people have the fear that hanging out with someone who does have a mental illness, that somehow they will contract it as well. Mental illness is not contagious at all. And so one of the major things I really want to point out in this lesson is that we have to have compassion for everybody. I mean, of course, we all know that. But when we see someone who's different or we just perceive them to be a certain way based off of our own perception of what that stereotype is, we're doing ourselves a disservice as well as that person a disservice. The people around us, we're all the same. We all go through different things. Some people have physical ailments that they struggle with. Some people have mental health ailments that they struggle with. Some people have situational elements. And so I really want us to be aware that everybody we see, everybody that is around us, has experienced some form of mental health struggles at some time in their life. Some of the struggles are obvious and some are not. But mental health struggles are not greater or worse than what other people may be experiencing. And now a quick word from my sponsor. For you, my listener, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. Many of you don't know this about me, but I'm an avid reader. So this is a great opportunity for me to be able to download any book I'd like to read, specifically if I'm walking my dog at the gym or even driving. So for you to get your free audiobook, go to www.audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. They have over 185,000 books for you to choose from. So I'm pretty confident you'll find the book you're looking for. So check it out today. I have the pleasure of introducing Shannon Love. She's an author who will be sharing her amazing inspirational story of how she overcame psychosis. Welcome to my show, Shannon.
Thank you for having me, James.
It's such a pleasure. You know, when you first reached out to me, I was kind of overwhelmed with all the things that have transpired in your life. You know, I read your website and saw how transparent you were with a lot of the things that many people don't really talk about. I think mental illness, there's such a stigma at times of what that means. But I think what many people don't realize is people who have mental illness are, as you know, are just like everybody else, are just like me, are just like anybody that you'd see on the street. And so I'm really glad today that you are able to share your story and shed light on this situation to help people have an insight, to help people have compassion, and help people realize that we are all the same.
Oh, thank you, James. I agree. Mental illness is similar to heart disease in that it is it's a disease that affects an organ in your body. But when the organ that it affects is the one that controls your thoughts, your behaviors, and your emotions.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good way to look at it. Because psychology itself is more of a softer science, meaning you can't really quantify or you can't put your finger on it as much. Sometimes people think, oh, it's just someone's acting out, but it's really not. Sometimes it's more of an organic component as far as it truly affects the brain. It affects many aspects of one's life in a scientific way and not necessarily someone's personality or the behaviors that someone demonstrates.
I agree. And my understanding is that it's a mixture. You can be predisposed genetically for mental illness. And also there are also the environmental factors and your way of thinking and your as well as the choices that you make.
Yes, that's very true. So why don't we jump into your story? Because it sounds like an amazing story and I can't wait for my listeners to hear about it.
Oh, okay, sure. Several years ago, I believe I was 41 at the time, I was going through a routine physical while we were living in Beijing, China. It was mandated by my husband's employer just to be sure that they could meet our medical needs in the location that we were living in. Mm-hmm. And so as I was going through the physical, they discovered through my EKG that it was quite abnormal. And it was so much so that they thought that I was having a heart attack and would not allow me to leave the hospital at the time.
Wow.
That turned into a series of tests that lasted about 5 months, which triggered an anxiety disorder. Mm-hmm. Towards the end of that period, that 5 month period, I decided to go back to school and get my master's degree. And while I was in school, the anxiety disorder exacerbated into mania.
Okay.
And a series of circumstances happened that were very stressful events in my life. And I started becoming hyper-religious and paranoid, and eventually I began to hear a voice that I developed a relationship with, and that pretty much at that point I was full-on psychotic.
Once again, I really appreciate you being forthcoming and transparent in this, because I think so many times people maybe think of psychosis as what they see in the movies. And yeah, sometimes that's true, but I think people don't necessarily understand the symptomology of what that is. And so when symptoms are exacerbated, so we all have a predisposition to something. It just really depends on what that is. And so, you know, it sounds like for you, that predisposition eventually came out for whatever reason. Sometimes a psychosis can be triggered by really traumatic events. So you experienced this 5 month period of going through extensive tests, and then things just started to become exacerbated. And pretty soon that predisposition all of a sudden came out.
I believe you're right.
One of the things that many people don't realize is there are different versions of mania. Today's episode is not about the diagnostic criteria of that, but mania can come out in many different forms. And so what was one of the manic expressions for you, do you think?
Two primary symptoms of mania were hyper-religiosity, and I know that a lot of people are uncomfortable with this, but hypersexuality, which is very common.
Yes, it is.
I was quite interested in two religions at the time, my heritage, which is Christianity, and then the Baha'i faith that I was introduced to by my closest friend in Beijing. And I think the fact that I was manic and that I became fascinated with the Baha'i faith, and I also felt a certain loyalty to my Christian heritage, I allowed the two of them to kind of roll into a storm, I guess, inside of my head. And I became quite hyper-religious, to a point to where I beginning to feel like I was hearing messages from God and that sort of thing.
And, you know, one thing I want my listeners to understand is when someone has a psychotic episode, what typically happens is, and there are different versions of how that psychotic episode will manifest itself. And one, of course, is the hyper-religiosity. But the way it works is the person is the central theme in, and I use this word very loosely, in a movie. So this, when the person is the main character in their perception of the of what movie they're in, whatever the plot line is, for you, it was hyper-religiosity, you will then become the spokesperson of that. And so everything around you all of a sudden feeds into that thought pattern of the hyper-religiosity of how you link those things together. So they're what's called ideas of reference. So something may happen around you and all of a sudden you're like, ah, that makes sense. The person did this because it links back to what my thought pattern is. And so that's one thing I really like my listeners to understand is when someone goes through a thought disorder, everything is so internal mentally that it creates this whole new world of what makes sense for that person. Does that sound like what was happening with you?
It sounds exactly like that. And as my mania became just delusional, where I started creating all these delusions, that's exactly what happened. I think that's how the delusions feed off of each other and feed off the environment, is that I just make a connection out of everything that happens to and allow that whatever I hear or see to connect to the delusion that is what I have in my head.
Yes. So how did this affect your marriage at that time?
Well, it was pretty rough at the time.
I'm sure.
As I said, I began to converse with a voice in my head, and this voice in my head and I actually developed a relationship, an intimate relationship that became quite spiritual and erotic. And the voice in my head convinced me that the world was watching me and everything that I did, and my husband was a bad guy, and that he was really the main player, and he had been manipulating me all of these years and never really loved me. The voice in my head, which I will name Valentino. I named him something else, but that's his name in the book.
Okay.
Valentino told me this, and he also asked me to marry him, and then that we were somewhat like prophets, and we were going to change the world, and God had big plans for us. And I actually asked my husband for a divorce.
And by no means am I minimizing what you went through, but what I'm hearing is very common for people who experience a psychosis. My listeners who may not have any background with any of this information, this is a very common pattern. Either there are five different ways in which the theme comes out. It can be someone can be a spy. They can have a love interest as far as some movie star is, or they're related to them, or they're dating them. They can be very politically important. They can have alien component, or they can have the religious component. And so these five themes are going to come out in some way, and it is going to affect the people around them, because as a person gets lost in that psychosis, it is going to feel as if what was considered normal prior to the psychosis all of a sudden is going to come out in a different way. And all of a sudden you question everything, and everybody's against you. The closest people are going to feel as if they are against you, that they are manipulating you. So I really want to normalize what you're saying, by no means minimizing what you're saying, but I want to normalize that for my listeners as well.
No, I'm glad you did that, James, because the whole point of me sharing my story and writing my book is so that people can understand what the average person who's dealing with a psychotic break is, the way why that person is behaving the way he or she is, or the thoughts are is in the delusion, and how that person is actually reacting to these delusions and hallucinations as rationally as that person can possibly react to in her state of mind.
Exactly. And one thing it's really necessary for my listeners to understand is that the perception of what's happening inside someone who's experiencing psychosis, it is real. So it doesn't matter what I say. It doesn't matter what anybody else says. If they believe it to be true, then it is true.
That is so. Trying to convince someone who is dealing with a delusion that their delusion is false is a moot point. I don't think anybody could have convinced me otherwise. I would have just assumed they were trying to manipulate me, because I was quite paranoid as well.
Exactly. So you asked your husband for a divorce, and then what happened?
He He was devastated. He didn't understand. He knew that I was not myself, but mm-hmm. because I conversed with my hallucination in my head, mm-hmm. and I also was trying to hide this reality, this relationship that I was having, I tried to act as normal as I possibly could.
Sure.
And I was not completely successful, of course, but he knew that I was not quite myself, but he really didn't understand why I was asking him for a divorce. But he refused to give up on me. He said, you're my wife. I'm not going to divorce you. And he called my psychologist, because at the time I was seeing a psychologist because my anxiety had reached a dire level that I knew that at one point that I needed to see someone. And he just held on to me. And he just, when everyone around him probably thought, you need to give up on this woman, you need to run, mm-hmm. take the kids and run as far as you can, he refused to. He was so dedicated to me and to trying to figure out what was going on and how to get to win me back.
Wow, that's absolutely amazing. That's true love. It really is.
It's unconditional love.
Yes, it definitely is. Wow, that's very inspiring. As he continued to say, no, I'm not going to let go of you, and you're having these delusions in your head, what transpired beyond that?
Well, as I said, I was quite hyper-religious, and I even fell into the state with this Baha'i prayer book that I wanted to go through and read it and translate it, and I would put my head on the ground and bow down to the ground, and mm-hmm. and one night I actually convinced my husband to stay up all night and read the Baha'i prayer book with me through the night, and he did it. He obviously thought that it was bizarre and he didn't understand why I wanted to do it, but he, at that point, he was just trying to do anything and everything he could to save our marriage and to show me that he was on my side. But honestly, no one really knew exactly what was wrong with me until I fell into a state of terror. Mm. I just assumed, I had this delusion that China and my husband wanted me dead, mm-hmm. and I needed to escape. And Valentino, my hallucination told me that if I went to the hospital, that they would they would transport me to the U.S. to safety. So I pretended like I had these severe stomach cramps and took myself into the emergency room of the local international hospital. After some time of trying to kind of figure out what was wrong with me, they discovered that I was in psychiatric distress. Mm-hmm. They kept me overnight, and the next day they transported me to a psychiatric unit in another hospital in Beijing.
Was this an American-based hospital, or was this a Chinese
no,
hospital?
I was the only foreigner in the hospital.
Okay.
They treated me like a rock star. They gave me special treatment, and they were extremely kind and gentle with me.
That's wonderful.
Unfortunately, I was too paranoid to allow them to give me medicine because I just assumed that they were trying to poison me. Mm-hmm. And over after just 3 days, I became hysterical, and I stood by the door and screamed by the door until they allowed me to leave, and they had to call my husband. And so I had to be transported to the U.S. and placed into a psychiatric unit there before they were able to get some medication inside of me and return me to baseline.
So you're back in the United States. Did your husband and family move back over there at that time, or did they come visit you at that time, or were you separated from them?
At that point, we were still based in Beijing. They just transported me there for hospitalization, and my husband and children came along with me, and my husband's employer actually sent a nurse to accompany me on the airplane. You can imagine putting someone in that state of mind on that airplane with a lot of other people.
Sure.
So they did get me to take probably some sort of tranquilizer or something to kind of keep me from going and becoming hysterical. Mm-hmm. We went back to my hometown so that my husband and children could be with loved ones and also be near me. And I was in a psychiatric unit there. I was inpatient for a couple of weeks and then outpatient for another week. And by the end of the third week, I was still having some delusions, but I think all my hallucinations had dissipated. Mm-hmm. And I had also, after about 3 weeks in the hospital, I had decided to trust my husband, and he kind of regained my trust at that point.
Oh, that's wonderful. So let me just tell my listeners. So hallucinations are essentially anything that affects your five senses. You can have visual hallucinations. You see something that's not there. You hear something that no one else hears. You can feel something touch your skin that is really not there. It's a tactile hallucination. You can smell something. You can taste something. So what hallucinations are, they essentially affect the five senses. Delusions are the thoughts, or kind of like that movie plot line we create in our head. So those are our thought related. So just so my listeners understand that. So for you, the hallucinations were no longer there. Now, was that based off of some of the medication you took?
Yes. I really do not think that I would have come out of my psychotic break at that point. Mm-hmm. I was so far gone. When I was in the psychiatric unit in the hospital, I was probably one of the worst kids. They had me in the ICU unit, and mm-hmm. I was definitely I wouldn't even speak at one point. I was pretty much mute for a few days.
Wow.
But if they had not put me on medication, I honestly don't think I would have come out of it.
Sure. One of the things when I work with people who perhaps have similar struggles as you is that's one of the criteria that I have to have them have is they have to have some type of medication protocol. So I'm really glad they found something that worked with you. Because anything else, any type of therapy beyond that, if there's not a baseline of medication of some sort, well, then it doesn't matter what I say or what I do, because a person is so internal that they hear everything, they think everything, they have these hallucinations and these delusions. So I'm so glad they found a protocol that worked for you.
Oh, thank you. Well, I did have some issues, some side effects with my medication, but we worked that out over mm-hmm. time. But you are exactly right. When I was symptomatic, it was impossible to rationalize with me because I was not capable of it. My life was completely ruled by my delusions and my hallucinations. And until I was able to return to baseline, we weren't really able to come up with a good plan for me to maintain my stability.
Yes.
And I had to return to baseline before we could even get to that point.
Yes, that's the first step. So it sounds like you were able to do that. You trusted your husband again. And then what happened next?
Well, we returned to Beijing. And my husband's employer allowed us to return to Beijing for just a few months. I became psychotic, I believe, or full-on psychotic in May. And then I was in the hospital in July. My family returned to Beijing in August, and they allowed us to stay there until December to kind of tie up loose ends and say goodbye to all of our friends and to have some closure. And then they repatriated us to the U.S.
Okay.
Meanwhile, I was seeing a it was mandated by my husband's company that I see a psychologist. Mm-hmm. I think I had to see him 4 or 5 days a week. I had to see him maybe it was just 3 days a week. I forget now, but it was several days a week. Plus my husband and I had to go to marriage counseling once a week. Mm-hmm. And during that time, as I returned to baseline, I began to have severe depression as a side effect from my antipsychotic, so much to the point where I was becoming very close to having suicidal thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Which is once again normal time. So yeah. I want to normalize this for my listeners. Yes.
So at that point, I secretly stopped taking my medication. Mm-hmm. And because I secretly stopped taking my medication very shortly after we returned to the U.S. to live, I suffered my second mm-hmm. psychotic break. And I did not take medication throughout my entire second break. And I managed to recover from it over a 3-month period. It was an uphill battle, and I would not recommend it to anyone.
Yes.
But shortly after my second psychotic break, after I recovered from that, I traveled, and which was a bad idea. My psychiatrist got me to agree to take a mood stabilizer to prevent me from becoming manic.
Okay.
Because I hoped that would work, but it didn't. I became psychotic again. At that point, I put myself into the hospital at that point. I said, this is enough. And that's when I got on some medications and I worked with my psychiatrist, and since then I've been able to maintain stability because stayed on my medication because yes. I know that that's what works for me.
Exactly. And you know, once again, I really appreciate how transparent you are. I know at times it can be very overwhelming to share a story because it doesn't necessarily put us in the light that we want people to see us, but there's a part of you, in fact, the person that I'm speaking with today is a part of you that recognizes that the person you were is not the person you want to become, and that you are able to find stability. You are able to be grounded. And so I'm really happy to hear your story. I'm really honored to hear your story. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, James. I appreciate it. I'm enjoying being on your show, and if this helps other people, I'm very happy to share it.
Yes, definitely. And you know, when I look at your website here, and if people want to find you online, it's at lovekaleidoscope.com. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And so help me understand the specifics of your website, and so it's helpful for my listeners.
Well, my website has it has a blog, and I was writing in it quite regularly, but I discovered that when I write about it, in my blog regularly, I think too much about my own psychotic experience, and mm-hmm. and that's not healthy. So now I've limited myself to writing in the blog maybe once every 2 weeks, one article every 2 weeks. And I try to write research-based articles that basically just offer information that I would want to know if I were developing symptoms again, or mm-hmm. if I had a loved one who was developing these symptoms. I actually highly recommend my website to people with a loved one, because you're able to probably translate that information a little bit more clearly than the person who is having symptoms.
Exactly.
And I have one page that offers several resource helplines and that you can call organizations have offered or asked me to place their information on my website. And then I also have just different types of therapy, of psychotherapy, the information about different types of psychotherapy, because people have a lot of options when it comes to psychotherapy and they don't know it. And I also have a section that offers recipes for brain healthy foods.
Because, oh, that's neat. That's wonderful.
Because I truly believe that your mental health and your physical health are very connected. And
yes, they are.
I hope that people understand that a holistic approach is probably more likely going to keep them healthy than just focusing on one part of their body.
Yes, that's true. No, so we have just a few more minutes, but tell my listeners about your book.
Oh, okay, sure. My book is basically a retelling of my story, and I try to write it in kind of a fun way so that it reads like a novel and that it does have some humor in it. But the story itself is a true story. From my understanding, from other people that have read it, it's brought out every emotion. They've laughed, they've cried. But when they close the book in the end, they understood and felt what it would be like to be psychotic. And they were able to understand what their loved ones were going through who were struggling with these symptoms.
That's such a talent to have, to be able to relate it to people who aren't struggling with what you struggled with, to be able to relate it to such a way that people can immerse themselves in what that feels like, the reality of someone who has a psychosis, and to be able to make that audible to people who don't have that. So I think that's such an amazing gift that you have.
Thank you. I enjoyed writing it.
Excellent. Well, Shannon, I want to thank you so much for being on my show today. And once again, if my listeners would like to find your information, they'll find it at lovekaleidoscope.com.
Okay. Yes, of course.
Well, thank you once again.
Thank you, James, for having me. It was a delight to be on your show.
I'd also like to thank you, the listener, for joining with me today. Please subscribe to this podcast, either through iTunes or through whichever podcast portal you joined with me today. Also, please visit my website, jamesmillerlifeology.com. You may enroll in the Lifeology Academy I created. They're self-directed courses for successful people just like you. You may also see all the Lifeology YouTube episodes I've created. Currently, there are over 135 episodes for you to watch. And also on my website, you may find many other tools and techniques which will help you simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. Have an amazing week, and I'll talk to you very soon.